Hey guys, my name is Crystal Kenny, and I'm in love with creating. All things artistic and imagination involved. I'm an American girl who chased her creative dreams all the way to Paris, France, making a living using photography. This podcast takes you inside the stories of all the artsy folks I've met along the way and gives you that extra push to discover your creative gifts. The desire to create is deeply inside each and every one of us, and I give you the tools and inspiration to find a new way of living a more creative life. This is La Vie Creative, the podcast. Claudine Hemingway is a descendant of famed writer Ernest Hemingway. We bumped into each other at a party and decided to team up and dive deep into French history, but with a twist, by bringing a spotlight to those lesser-known creatives in France. This is History with a Hemingway.
Hey guys, thanks so much for listening. If you want more bonus material and to support the show, head on over to patreon.com/lavie creative. And also don't forget to check out Amazon, where you can pick up my new book, Paris, A Life Less Ordinary. In the book, I talk about my creative adventures in Paris, from starting my business to being homeless, hello, starving artist, to how I met all these wonderful creative people. Don't forget to check it out on Amazon. And also thank you so much once more for listening and for your support. Enjoy the show.
All right. So welcome back to Paris History avec Hemingway. I am here with Claudine Hemingway to bring you more information on famous French creative women in history. And today we are talking about Juliette Récamier. And she was very famous for her salons. And we've talked a lot about salons in this podcast. It was basically like the hangout for artists where you got your work seen and sold, and very elitist in a lot of ways from what I understand. But we're going to talk a little bit about how Juliette changed the salon world. So I'll have Claudine take it from here.
Yeah, Juliette, she's really, she's definitely known for her salons. She's also, a lot of people might know her because of a painting in the Louvre of her, which is kind of where I first knew of her. And then was just curious, so had to find more information about her. But Juliette was born in 1777, and she was a daughter of the king's counselor and notary. And her mother, Madame Bernard, they lived in Lyon. And when she was younger, the family all moved to France because to Paris, and because her father became the postmaster general.
Big deal.
Big deal. So they were living in Paris, and he was later arrested, and they thought that he was working with the royalists. And so the young Juliette actually helped get him released. Mm-hmm. And she was only 12 years old. Her mom was also, she would also go out and work at Versailles in the court. And so she took her mom, she would take Juliette out there to Versailles. And that's when Juliette actually met Marie Antoinette, and she was just really drawn to her because, you know, Juliette was, if you've seen the painting, which I'll put on my website, she was very beautiful. And so she was very young, and her mother would also throw salons. And so she would have these dinners and parties and salons, and a man named Jacques Rose Récamier would come. He was 30 years older than Juliette.
Wow. This is a recurring theme.
Yeah. And they would actually get married on April 24, 1793. She was just 15 years old. So, but it's actually believed that he might have actually been her biological daughter.
Wait, what? Yeah.
So there's a lot of historians that believe that she, you know, he was coming to these salons all the time from very long time ago, and that maybe he and her mother had a little, you know, dalliance, and that she was actually his daughter.
So he married his daughter?
But he did it because it was right before the terror started. You're talking right as the revolution's about to start. And so he was worried that he was going to die. He's going to get killed. So he wanted to make sure that she was going to be able to inherit his fortune. And this was the way he was going to be able to do it.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So their marriage was strictly platonic. They never consummated their marriage, and she was a virgin until she was 40, which might be a record in our podcast.
I was going to say, wow. Okay. Well, thanks, Dad.
Yeah. Thanks, Dad, husband. But they bought a house on Rue de Mont Blanc, and they lived there. And in October 1798, and she started having her salons, and her salons would bring like the best and the brightest from literature, politics, society, up and comers, everyone. And a lot of the reason people loved to come to her salon, because it was one of the first in France that was in Paris that was done in the Etruscan style. So, you know, she had a lot of this Greek influence. She started wearing the Greek dresses that would later be known as empire, the empire waistline. She was wearing all of this. And so she was basically ahead of the curve on so many different things. And so that was what also drew people to come visit her.
So, she was like a stylist. She was influencer. She was an influencer. I like it.
Yeah. So Juliet was considered one of the three graces, and that was with alongside Josephine and a woman named Madame Talon. And Napoleon, when he met her at a party, he, of course, was just spellbound by her, how beautiful she was. And he sent her a letter asking her if she would come and be one of Josephine's ladies in waiting. Apparently, that's how you get them close, you know, to.
Yeah. Be her friend. I can sleep with you.
Yeah. But she, Juliet was like, no, mercy. No. So she didn't like it.
She said no to Napoleon.
She said no to Napoleon. So her, you know, which you're probably going to guess how this might, some of the next steps are going to happen. So, yeah. So her salons are just kept, you know, were growing. She was having them every single week. She ended up having one of the visitors named Madame de Staël came, and they ended up becoming very close friends. Well, Staël was very, very outspoken critic of the revolution against Napoleon, everything. When Napoleon, you know, between her declining, these salons becoming so popular that he's hearing about it, but he can't go. He ended up finding a way, and he had Madame de Staël sent from Paris, like he exiled her from Paris. Mm-hmm. So at the same time, Juliet was a little worried about this because, you know, if she's going to go, you know, he's probably going to send me away too. And her husband in had been appointed to the Banque de France, and he was a huge financial donor to Napoleon. So, you know, there's probably a lot of issues going on in their house. So,
There's some quarrels.
So, but his actions, he was, you know, first he was a royalist. He was an outspoken critic. And because of a lot of his friends and his wife's activities, she decided that she better just leave. So she left Paris and went back to Lyon, where she was born. Her husband stayed in Paris. He lost his job. He had to sell their home. He had to sell, most of her jewelry, a lot of the silver, everything, because Napoleon, you know, between his wife and him, he basically, you know, they'll ruin you.
Yeah, they were going after her very purposely for denying them and going against them.
Yeah, very purposely. So after she went to Lyon, she decided to go to Italy, and she stayed in Naples and Rome, and she met more artists and more writers that had left Paris as well. So they were all down there having a great old time. And in 1813, she met King Murat and Caroline Bonaparte, his wife, who was Napoleon's sister.
Interesting.
Yeah. So take that, Napoleon.
Yeah. I'm befriending your sister.
Yeah. So they became very, very good close friends. And she stayed there for a while. Then she decided to go to Switzerland, where her friend Madame de Staël was. And while she was there, she met Prince Augustus of Prussia and fell in love with him. This is where we think she might have finally lost her virginity.
40 years later, guys, after marrying her dad. Okay, wait a minute. Pause, because what is her life? I mean, rubbing elbows with all these royal people and also like just having the best salons and hanging out with all these creatives. I mean, this is wild.
Yeah, in some ways it probably wasn't the best because of what she was doing, you know, being against Napoleon and everything else. But, you know, she was making up for a lot of it.
I was going to say, it sounds not bad.
It doesn't sound too bad. So, yeah, she's in Switzerland. She falls in love with Prince Augustus. He falls in love with her. she actually asked her husband for a divorce, and he,
her dad.
Yeah, her dad, her husband, husband slash dad, and asked him for a divorce, but he said no. Because it was just a really bad time. He was constantly going from having money to no money, having money to no money. So he had said, you know, this is a bad time. We can't do this. So she ends up returning back to Paris. You know, Napoleon's no longer in power, and she goes back to Paris, and she and the prince kept in touch, and they wrote each other with, you know, and had a pledge to each other that they would wait. You know, they would wait for each other. They wouldn't ever marry anybody else, that they, you know, were waiting until they got back together. But the prince never did marry again, but he had 11 children with his mistress.
Wait, so, I mean, I feel like he wouldn't even have a choice though, because he was a prince. That's not how things worked back
then.
That's
true. That's very true. Yeah.
But he had 11 kids with his mistress.
Yes.
But he never got to be with Juliet.
No. And poor Juliet goes back home with husband slash father.
Okay, it's all not so fun anymore.
Yeah, so she goes back to Paris, and she ends up getting an apartment in at the Abbaye au Bois. It was a convent that nuns ran and rented apartments to ladies in high society. So as a teenager, she had stayed in one for a year when her parents first moved to Paris, and they left her back in Lyon. So she ended up, she enjoyed it. She liked being there. So she had no problem. So she went back, you know, moved into this abbey, and she decided to start her salons again, but she had a strict no politics rule and only talking about literary subjects.
Interesting. I like that.
Yeah. So at this salon, she ended up marrying Francois René de Chateaubriand. And no, that's, I know that's the name of a steak. Most people think Chateaubriand is out of a steak, but it was a person. And, you know, he was this, you know, this huge writer that was in the, you know, the whole romantic movement. And so the two of them became, you know, very close friends and maybe even a love affair. But she, you know, they lived near each other. He lived on Rue de Bac, and she just lived just right off Rue de Sèvres, and just right there in the sixth. And so they lived very close to each other, and he would always go and visit her every single day.
And so, I mean, wow.
Yeah. So from 2 to 3 p.m., he would come and visit her, and they'd have their own time together right before her salon. So she was doing salons at this point, like every single day. And so she'd always have her own personal time with him, and she and her husband, you know, they were still married, but they lived separately. And when she came back, she was the one who, with from inheritance from her parents, she was the one who ended up supporting him.
Her dad.
Her dad slash husband. Yeah.
I keep bringing that back up. Wait, so, but technically the inheritance from her parents, wouldn't that be his money too?
Well, her mother and her
stepdaddy
other father.
this is like an episode of Jerry Springer or something. It's very complicated.
Who is her father? Yeah.
Wow.
But she, you know, ended up being the subject of many different paintings and artists because she just was so beautiful. And in 1800, Jacques-Louis David painted her in one of his most famous paintings. It's in the Louvre. It's actually never been finished. So she found him, you know, she sat for him many times, but she found him too slow. And he was upset with her when he found out she had actually asked Francois Girard to also paint her. And, you know, he wanted to be the only one that was going to do this painting of her. And, you know, and how dare she? And she just sat there and complained that it just took him too long to finish it.
I love boys and their ownership of things. Don't you be painting on my lady.
I know. Don't you take my subject. So he never finished it, and she demanded to have it back, but he would never give it to her. And he stayed with the painting in his apartment until he died.
Man, talk about a grudge.
I know, holding on a grudge there.
But let it go.
You can see it in the Salle d'Arrue, which is in the same room where his other paintings are, including the giant one of Napoleon being, you know, where he's crowning Josephine.
Oh, it's in the same room as that one.
Yeah. But she asked, she ended up asking one of his students to paint her instead. And, you know, which just ticked him off even more. So she ended up laying out on the little sofa, and she had her back turned, and she's nude, but she has dirty feet, and her face, like, you wouldn't really know it was her. Like, it just doesn't really look like her. And in a way it was Jacques-Louis David's revenge against her.
Dirty feet.
Yeah. But the one thing about her and these paintings that you always will see, she's always laying on what, you know, we would call now like a chaise lounge. And it actually was renamed a recamier because end of it is like, you know, it's really sloped, and we would call it like a sleigh bed, but it didn't have a back on it. And so it was always called, and it still is called, a recamier.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. But also in the Louvre, which is amazing, is that you could also go in there in the Richelieu wing in the Objet d'Art area. There is her former bedroom, and you could actually see her own furniture by the Jacob brothers, who also did a bunch of the furniture for Josephine, and her bed that's also at Ma Maison. But this beautiful mahogany bed has gilded bronze decorations, and it has really big sleeping, like purplish pink silk that's up above it. Those were all from her former home.
So she lived in the Louvre, or they just moved her furniture in there? Furniture
there.
I was gonna say, wow, that's pretty cool. She lived in the Louvre too.
But it's a part of the Louvre that nobody ever goes to. And it's just always so amazing just to stand there and just think of, like, you know, being, you know, putting yourself into, you know, this was her furniture, and what kind of things, you know, apparently the furniture didn't see a lot, but, you know,
there was no action in that bed, people. It always shocks me how small the beds are too, which I only recently learned was because they were afraid of choking on their tongues as they slept. So they would always sleep kind of upright.
Oh.
And so that's why the bed wasn't long enough for them to completely lay flat, because they didn't want to lay flat. They thought they would die and choke on their tongue if they laid flat.
That is fascinating. And creepy.
Yeah, super creepy. I guess whenever people die in their sleep, they're like, oh, they just choked on their tongue. Happens. Better not lay flat, because basically laying flat was the position of death. So people were actually not midgets. They were smaller for sure, but they were also sitting upright when they were sleeping.
Weird. Well, they also thought bathing, you know, make you sick too. So
yeah. Gross.
Yeah. But later on in her life, she ended up going blind. And nobody knew it. Only people that knew were her maids that, you know, helped her keep her house. They moved her furniture around so she was able to move around it without running into anything. But nobody knew that she had gone blind.
Did she keep that a secret? And why would she?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would think that at some point when, you know, you would kind of maybe know she was, but
Telling people.
Yeah. In July 1848, Chateaubriand died, and she had this idea that after he died, that she was going to go soon after him. And so the next year, in 1849, cholera spread throughout, you know, it was going all throughout Paris. And it was moving really quickly through all of the inhabitants of the Abbey. So she decided to move over to the Palais Royal, and she lived with her niece. And on May 11th, 1849, she died of cholera.
Oh gosh, this is so sad. Wait, so her husband / father died?
Yes.
And then she died only like a year later?
It was Chateaubriand with her very close friend and maybe lover died. And
that's okay. He died. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot. We'll need to have a graph or something for this.
I was going to say, I need a chart.
But she moved to the Palais Royal, and she ended up dying. She was 71 years old.
She did live a long time.
She did live. She's buried up there at Montmartre, so you need to go and find her. But today the Abbey is gone, and it was torn down in 1905. And the small street that it's not really even a street. It's more like, I don't think you could really drive on it. It's just kind of this little small dead end right off Rue de Sèvres. And there's a little square in the back, and it was renamed a while ago to Square Stéphane. It used to be actually called Square Recamier, but the street now is named Rue de Recamier. But you could go back. It's this very lovely little park that's just beautiful and has all these different, like, it's very small, but has different levels. And you could walk up and you could sit under a tree, and it's really beautiful and very peaceful. But it's just, and it's right off, you know, a very busy area of Paris, not very far from is it BHV? It's over there.
Mm-hmm.
Department
store. Yeah. The department store there.
Yeah. And then the David painting, you go into the Louvre and see that hanging up in the Denon wing, you know, really close to David's Napoleon, which is still one of my favorites. But, you know, the painting that he did of her has still never been finished. And it's just basically her kind of on her, you know, Recamier lounge with just a lamp, and that's all that's in it. But it's very beautiful, kind of in all of its simplicity. But then it's funny to know that he just was ticked off.
Is it obvious that it's not finished?
I mean, when I read that, I was like, oh, so I had to look closer, and you know, you could kind of see, you know, there's probably something meant for the right part of the painting or something, but it's really not that noticeable. Like, you know, there's other paintings you would know, like obviously they didn't even color those parts in. And there's also another painting of her, kind of almost in the same, she's laying down in the chaise lounge, but she has all of her books behind her. And that's in the Musée de la Vie Romantique.
I love that museum, and nobody goes there. It's just down from Montmartre as well. And it's got a cute little garden with a cafe that anybody can go in. Yes. And then the museum, you pay, I don't know, like 10 euros or something.
Yeah,
and it's just very cute. The Museum of Romance.
Yeah, it's really, really, really cute. It's very small, but it's definitely, you definitely get it. You get have that inside look of what life would have been like at that time living there without it being, you know, shellacking of making it into, you know, a Versailles.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Juliet still had a great life considering she made her dad and pissed Napoleon off, but sounds like things worked out for her.
You won't get past the, it could be her dad.
Yeah, definitely will not get past that. And I look forward to seeing the chart on your website along with some photos of the painting.
I'll get out my magic marker to start making a little chart.
Six degrees of Juliet.
Exactly.
I love it. Well, tune in next week, guys, for our next famous woman in French history, or not so famous. A lot of these women, nobody knows. And we look forward to chatting with you then.
Thank you for listening to Paris History Avec A. Hemingway. If you want to find out some more, you could always find me on my Instagram page, Claudine Bleu Blanc Rouge, and that's BLEU, as in the French way to spell it. And each day I post a daily history lesson about a person or a place or something in Paris, or it's lots of fun facts. And then also at claudinehemingway.com, where you can also sign up for my newsletter there.